We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
BlueWire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway. Raising it. Zach LaVine does it again.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're on the Blue Wire Network. We're brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here with Jason Pett, and we also have a special guest today from Prep to Pro Pod. It's Ben Pfeiffer. Ben, what's going on, man?
Not too much. Appreciate you guys having me on to talk about the draft, as we're doing pretty often these days. But it's always a good time, though.
So if you're a fan of the draft, you should definitely be listening to Prep to Pro Pod. Ben does it with another guy, Max Carlin, and it's one of the it's probably the single best source of draft news and analysis, in my opinion. They've been doing that for what, like about a year at this point?
Since March. It feels like forever, but
yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Well, they've already done a bunch of episodes on the 21 draft in addition to covering this 2020 draft. So we're going to get into that. But first, Jason, there was actually been a lot of like news and rumors around the draft, around the NBA in general. So let's talk about those a little bit first.
Yeah, so last night we had the Chris Paul Phoenix Suns thing kind of come out of nowhere with from ESPN report that they've talked. While there's nothing imminent, CP3 to the Suns is kind of a fun rumor. Like, maybe not the first team you'd think of, because obviously with there's been the Bucks stuff and like the, obviously the Knicks are always involved in all that crap. But the Suns coming off their 8-0 bubble run. Devin Booker was awesome. So was campaign. A fun young team there with Booker, with Ayton, with Mikal Bridges. And Mikal Bridges was doing a little trolling today. Emoji season. So that was kind of fun. But Chris Paul, that'd be a fun idea. Like, and if you look at like the contracts there, you have guys that you can move around to kind of make that big salary work, like Ricky Rubio, Kelly Oubre. I believe the Suns have the number 10 pick as well to dangle. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So some stuff though that they could absolutely make a trade work there with the Thunder, so that would be really a lot of fun. There were some Drew Holiday rumors and just kind of the Hawks in general. There were some rumors with them with the Timberwolves, and then the Drew Holiday stuff. I think an Atlanta guy came out and said was kind of dumped some cold water on those, said that oh no, the Hawks not really into the Drew Holiday sweepstakes. But his name with the Hawks has come up a few times. I know Zach Lowe brought him up last week as a possible target with that number 6 pick. Maybe get another team involved there. Maybe with the Timberwolves, maybe there could be a 3-way deal there, something like that. So with the Drew Holiday stuff, and then we also had some Rockets fire this morning as well, coming from ESPN, that James Harden and Russell Westbrook might not be too happy with what's going on, which I feel like is just like the natural like progression of what has been going on there. We have D'Antoni leaving, then Daryl Morey leaves. So like you can whatever you want to think about Steven Silas. It sounds like a lot of people like him, but with him there and with the new guy taking over from Morey, I believe that's Raphael Stone got promoted from within, and with all the stuff with Tillman Fertitta and just some of the questionable stuff with his ownership, like it was only a matter of time where you figured you'd hear these rumors come out about Harden and Russ not being happy. No requested trades yet, but there's some. I know Kendrick Perkins was throwing some smoke on the fire there, talking about how Harden was like ghosting the new coaching staff and ownership and all that kind of stuff. Who knows how true that is? But stuff really picking up here. I guess, Ben, let's start with the Chris Paul, the Sun stuff. Just, what do you make of that? Do you like that fit? What kind of deal do you think would need to get done there? I do kind of like the fit. I know with the Suns just being a fun young team, they could use that kind of veteran presence.
God, I think that would be awesome. I mean, I don't know if that's like a move that really vaults Phoenix into championship contention, barring some really drastic improvements from one of their guys internally or another move. But that would certainly make them like a very fun Western Conference playoff team. I think it makes sense, like you said, with Rubio. It definitely would involve Rubio, Oubre, the 10 pick. Definitely, they have assets to dangle. I wonder if a third team gets involved, because I feel like acquiring Rubio doesn't make a ton of sense for OKC given their timeline and what they have on the roster. So I think he could be a candidate for a third team to come in and swoop him, because Ricky Rubio is like a very good player. He's pretty underrated, I think, just in his general decision-making and defense and the improved jumper. I think he could be a very useful player for a team with already that has star power. So I wonder if he could be kind of another piece there for a third team to get involved, maybe in a big way or maybe just to help absorb salary. But I certainly, as just a basketball fan, as someone who enjoys watching good basketball, I think Phoenix and Devin Booker and Chris Paul would be incredibly fun as a backcourt duo. I'm all for it. So
my first thought on this is that I would be kind of bummed CP3 doesn't go to Milwaukee, because I feel like if it's going to be Giannis's last year, obviously the team has been incredible in the regular season the last couple of years, but they have some very obvious playoff shortcomings. Seems like CP3 is going to be the best player moved this offseason. I would have loved to just see CP3 in Milwaukee if this is going to be Giannis's last year, and just see if that could be, the one fix to get him over the top. But at the same time, I do really like the fit in Phoenix as well. I think that, the package that you mentioned is probably exactly what it's going to take. And then in terms of like where Phoenix would be in the order in the West, like I do still think they're behind the Lakers and the Clippers, but I could see them being with that next group with like the Nuggets, the Mavs, maybe the Jazz, possibly ahead of the Blazers. So I think you'd be looking at them maybe at like a 5-6 seed. And yeah. I believe Phoenix has not made the playoffs for 10 years at this point. They made it on that one really weird Hornacek year when Hornacek was coaching them. Am I right about
this? They were short that year.
They won 48 and were short. Okay, but either way, they haven't made it in like 10 years. So like you just got to try to move the needle forward a little bit, even if it doesn't get you to championship contention. And I think that would be really cool to just like, see if the Suns could continue to build off their positive momentum that they had going in the bubble. And yeah, in terms of like what they would be sending back, do they really need another young player? Like they have so many of them in terms of the 10th pick. I don't think they're losing too much with Oubre, in my opinion. And obviously CP3 is a gigantic upgrade over Rubio, who I agree is useful and underrated. And I think, it'd be cool to see Rubio on the Clippers. There's a couple other teams who could use him as well. Maybe even the Bulls, honestly. He would be fun in Milwaukee too. Yeah, they certainly have something there. And back to Milwaukee, actually, one of my first thoughts on this was that too bad Milwaukee didn't keep Brogdon, because like Brogdon would be a really good trade piece to try to go get CP3 in this. But now I don't really know if they have anything useful to offer. And I think, it sounds like the Phoenix thing could actually get done with CP3. Like it sounds pretty serious. I read somewhere this morning that Chris Paul actually gave his like blessing for the trade.
Yep. I think Windhorst claimed that like CP3 is actually like interested in going there. I mean, who knows? But like, because I know some people like would be worried about are they a championship team? Like, is that the type of team you'd really want to go to? But yeah, it does seem like the Thunder are working with him to try to find a deal, and that he would be interested in that. And yeah, I think that makes sense. And you brought up Devin Booker as well, and just made me think like there were some weird like rumblings. Like I know they were refuted like almost immediately about him being upset, but I mean he's been in the league now 4 or 5 years, and the Suns have been shit every single year. So like you need to at least start making some legitimate progress there with Devin Booker before he actually does get pissed and leave. And Chris Paul would do that.
Yeah. So Ben, who would you take if you're the Thunder at 10, if you end up getting 10? Cause I have a clear and definitive answer on this, but I'm going to put you on the spot first.
God, that definitely isn't a thing I've thought about. I feel like I've thought about every single pick in this draft so many times over. That's not one that I've thought about.
Okay, well, the answer is Poku. Because they're going to be bad for a few years.
I would certainly like that. I would say Vassell if he falls to 10, but I don't know if he's going to get there. I think Poku is probably as good of an answer. I mean, I'd love – yeah, I mean, you're not going to take Maxey just because they have all of the guards. I think Poku is about as good of an answer as you can give there.
I think they're going to tear it down. They're going to tear it down.
They hired a new coach today. They promoted from within some guy who I think was their G League coach, right? Yeah. Mark Dano. I don't know how to say his name, but once they were the last team to hire a coach out of all the teams that needed to hire one, and promoting from within like that, I mean, that's just a clear sign that they're about to blow this up.
Jason, we got some Drew Holiday rumors too. Why don't you go over those real quick?
Yeah, I mentioned, like I said, with the Hawks have been a team mentioned a few times. Again, the Hawks were also – there was a rumor from this morning about them talking about the Timberwolves as well with the number one pick. I think it was the number one pick. Whatever. The Timberwolves have the one. The Hawks have six. And the Drew Holiday would be four. The Pelicans getting involved for the number six pick. That was mentioned last week as well. Also, another, I feel like, great fit with the Hawks if they were able to swing something, just him and Trae Young, because we know the Hawks' defense has been absolutely terrible. So to have a legitimate backcourt defender next to Trae Young, who is as good as he is offensively, maybe one of the worst defenders in the entire league. So I feel like that would make a lot of sense. I'm curious to see, like, what else would have to get done or what else would have to be included, what other team. Like I said, would we have a three-team deal with, like, the Timberwolves? I know Jared Culver's name was brought up in this other rumor involving the Hawks, and like the 17 pick is out there as well. I think the Timberwolves have that. So, Ben, what would you look for in a possible Drew Holiday to the Hawks? Like, what kind of deal do you think would happen there? Do you think that a team like the Timberwolves would get involved somehow, or some other team? What do you think there?
Man, I'm really not sure. I mean, you'd think that some of their young wing pieces, like Herder, Reddish, Hunter, have to be involved if it's just a straight swap. I like that a lot. I mean, the only concern really is, like, Holiday doesn't really fit Trae Young's timeline, just given his age. I mean, he's 30-ish. Like, yeah, he's, like, 30 now. Obviously not old, but, like, not getting any younger. But I think from a basketball standpoint, it's a really solid fit. Like you said, Drew Holiday, one of the best point-of-attack defense guards in the league, best, like, interior defending guards in the league. I think he's a little overrated as an off-ball defender and therefore just as a defender in general, but still a very, very good defensive guard. And then offensively, I mean, I think he's pretty underrated. One of the best, if not the best guard when it comes to getting into the paint and getting to the rim, even if he's, you know, not incredible finishing there nowadays. He's so good getting there. He's a good passer, a good enough shooter. Like, he's an awesome player, and I think would be an incredible compliment to Trae as someone who you can play off the ball and someone who can, you know, run offense next to Trae Young. I mean, I think a lot of Hawks fans or Hawks people talk about getting that guy in this draft, finding someone who can exist next to Trae off of the ball and also run the offense when Trae sits or Trae's off. And that player, like, doesn't really exist in this draft. And if he does, there's one or two of them. But Drew Holiday would definitely do that. So I think it would be a really, really good fit for Atlanta, and, like, just from a basketball standpoint, despite my concerns with, like, the long-term timeline. Because even with Drew, I don't think you're really competing with Atlanta anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw this out there. I hate this. I don't want to see Drew Holiday wasting the last years of his prime trying to drag Atlanta into the 8th seed in the East. I want to see him on a contender. So there's so many other – this is just selfishly. Like, there's so many teams that could use Drew Holiday, right? Like, put him on the Nuggets. Maybe put him on Philly. Maybe put him on the Bucks. Like, I would love to see
him on the Pelicans, who are going to be good soon.
Yeah, I'm very curious why the Pelicans, like, seem very desperate to – I know it sounds like he's going to opt out of that $27 million next season, which – I'm kind of surprised by. I mean, maybe he just wants one more big deal and he thinks he could get something next offseason when there's going to be way more money. But I was kind of surprised to see that in their report this morning that he's expected to opt out next year. I mean, I guess just because of that, it's going to be a huge free agent class and there's going to be so much money involved, more money. I don't know. But I'm the Pelicans are, yeah, definitely trying to win. Well, not a championship next season, but they want to be very good. So I'm
definitely
curious.
Make the playoffs next season.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, with Drew for sure, I think. But
Right. So, they should want, like, a lot. So I'm curious, like, what – like, if you're looking at – if it is the Hawks, like, number six pick, and then, like you said, probably a decent amount more. Like, I'm just really curious, like, where the Pelicans would settle on a trade there just because they should want to keep him for right now. It just seems like they're – I don't want to say desperate to trade him, but – the Jrue Holiday rumors have been out there like for so long. It seems like it's been a few years. he's been rumored to be on the trade block. So and a lot of teams could certainly use him.
If the Pelicans end up at number six, Ben, I'm just going to put you on the spot again. Who do you take at number six if you're New Orleans?
Isaac Okoro, if he's there. Devin Vassell, if he's not.
Yeah, Vassell was the guy who I was going to say there.
Yeah, because Pelicans in the rumored trade-ups – wing defense is like number one for New Orleans. I think at this point, you've got two very good options. I'd say there's like three real options in the entire draft. Third being Josh Green to me. But those are the two really, really good ones. I think both of them are probably going to be off the board at 13. Almost certainly, I think. So that would be definitely a nice get in a trade up. But I mean, I'm generally like anti-trading up in this draft unless the scenario is really specific. But I think that would actually be a pretty good one because those are two guys the Pelicans could really use.
We'll definitely talk about the Bulls and possibly trading them because that's been kind of out there. A bit later, though. And that other, the other part of that rumor with the Timberwolves and Hawks and the Jared Culver stuff. I know Ricky was a Jared Culver guy. Then I am not, were you a Jared Culver guy coming into the draft last year?
I was a Jared Culver guy.
And he, from what – I didn't watch the Timberwolves a lot last year, but I feel like from what I saw, he sucked.
Yeah,
real bad. Yeah. So do you guys still have faith in him turning around? Like, it's interesting that he's in this rumor, like, already, like, the Timberwolves ready to bail on him already. Like, do you think that'd be a mistake? Do you think you guys just kind of missed on that one? Like, what do you guys think about that?
I'm going to let Ben take this one first.
Sure. I mean, I think there were definitely some aspects of me missing on Culver. The big one was just, like, underestimating the level at which his, like, on-ball creation – would not translate, but like I still like have some belief in him. Like I probably overestimated this shot like a little bit, but I don't think there was any way to predict him being this bad of a shooter. Like he was horrific this last year, and I don't think that's gonna stick. I mean, he's probably not an incredible shooter ever, but I think he should be good enough. And also, just like he didn't really have any help on the wing. Like, he was like their only real wing defender, and that obviously puts a ton of strain. I thought he was pretty solid on defense. Obviously, you know, had his issues defending off the ball, as all rookies do, but I think he was pretty good on the ball. Good guarding down, I thought. And, you know, had his moments as a team defender. I think he's still going to be a pretty good defensive wing. And then offensively, like, still, like, the passing kind of just wasn't there, which was definitely surprising to me in that he was, like, an incredibly good wing passer at Texas Tech. But again, I think a lot of that relates to the lack of self-creation, which is kind of key to unlock that passing, especially in a team like Minnesota that we'll say doesn't run like the best offense tactically and doesn't have, you know, the best personnel to maximize someone like Culver. So I think, like, I'm certainly, like, not ready to give up on Jared Culver.
Right, yeah. And don't do that.
Probably. Like, I shouldn't have had him like number two where I had him last year. That was an overshoot. But I am a big fan. I wouldn't like throw him away. I still have a decent amount of faith on him.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't use him to like move up in this draft.
Someone asked me, it was our mutual friend Francis on Twitter. He said, who is the worst person you would trade, the worst player, I should say, who's the worst player you would trade the Bulls number four overall pick for? And I was tempted to say Culver, but I feel like that would probably just be too much to give up for Culver. And I ended up saying like OG Anunoby, but I didn't feel strong about it. And he was like, well, I was thinking more DeJounte Murray. It's sort of it's a really good like sort of thought exercise just to like go through what sort of established player you would actually trade that pick for. But with Culver, what really bummed me out is he made like 45% of his free throws. So when you're like
Lonzo Ball-esque,
I mean, just like really, really fucking bad. And his true shooting percentage was under 50%. He wasn't getting to the line as much, probably because he was scared to take a free throw, honestly. And just like Ben said, I also thought that he would be able to will himself into one of these like new age oversized offensive initiators. And I'm not totally sure how many opportunities he actually got to like play on the ball and be in those situations as a rookie in Minnesota. Certainly that team had a lot of issues, and now they acquired D'Angelo. Maybe they go get LaMelo Ball with the first pick here. I don't think Jarrett Culver's ever going to find himself really in an on-ball role if those two guys
Nor should he, I think. I mean, I don't think that's a role he ever should be in after watching him last year. Even like before, I think he was always like more of a secondary, like I always thought of him as a complimentary wing piece, like not an initiator, but like even like in his secondary offense, he really struggled. But yeah, I mean, I obviously the addition of someone like LaMelo, I think, would help him. But
so yeah, that's an interesting rumor, and then we'll hit one more before we get into the draft talk, and we got to talk about the Rockets.
Yeah, the Rockets.
The rumors that James Harden, Russell Westbrook, they're upset. I feel like we talked about this on the podcast months ago, Jason. At least I think we did. Maybe
we did bring up the possibility of just like after D'Antoni left, after Daryl Morey left, we talked about the possibility like maybe James Harden will ask out sometimes. We always kind of figured that the Rockets might look to trade Russ just because, I mean, naturally because he struggled and he's getting up there. Like Harden's still in his prime, still like a top five player. Russ, not as much. They both have huge contracts. But now with the rumors out there, and just some of these rumblings about them not being happy, and again with the new coach, with the first time head coach, and with a new first time like whatever head of basketball operations, like I get it. It's not surprising at all that this is coming out. I'm like curious like what they think they're going to do this off. I'd have to look at the Rockets roster again, but like I'm not even sure what else they can do. Like I think PJ Tucker like might be up for an extension. I'm not really sure how much else they'd add. They would obviously, I think they want to add a big man because I don't think they're going to go like full blown small ball anymore. But like some of the stuff I'm like seeing out there, like I'm now starting to think that Harden's won't make the last through the season. Like I don't know if he's going to get traded this off season, but like, maybe we're trending to a point where he's like a huge trade deadline deal. I don't know. Like, I mean, it's certainly the whispers are certainly starting. Ben, what do you think? Do you think Harden lasts through this season with the Rockets?
Yeah, I mean, I would guess that he does. I just think he's too good for them to really like blow it up. I mean, with Harden and any sort of competent roster, I think you have a chance to win a title, even if it's an outside shot. He's that good of a basketball player and that good of an offensive engine. So I just, unless you can really get a haul, I'm not sure who you'd really want for him. Like if you can get the Pelicans to like give you Zion for him or like something of that ilk.
I mean, do the Sixers, I know the Sixers stuff has come up, like would Simmons for Harden be something?
I mean, even like that seems like kind of lateral. I mean, at least for Houston. Obviously I think that would be pretty fun for Philly, but yeah, I mean, I don't think Harden gets traded, and unless like the Rockets somehow are really bad or Harden, something happens with him. I just don't see it. I mean, I don't have intel or the ability to see into the future, but that would be my prediction that Harden is pretty safe where he is at the moment.
Well, what the hell? Then why do we ask you to come on the podcast?
I don't know.
I think the longer they hold on to Harden, the less value he's going to have. And I believe he can opt out after the 21-22 season. Is that correct? We're just going to go with it. We don't really fact.
That sounds right.
Podcast. Yeah. So, like, then at that point, if you trade him after this season, the team that's acquiring him is only getting, like, 1 year guaranteed. I think that would sort of impact whatever value he's going back. And, yeah, like you said, there is no fair trade for James Harden because James Harden's totally ridiculous. And, you know, one of the greatest shooting guards ever, still in the prime of his career. I just think this is totally inevitable that this is going to happen, and I don't think that there's going to be any saving this marriage between the Rockets and Harden. And let's be honest, like they got a lot of great years out of Harden. Harden was pretty loyal to the franchise for a long time. No one sticks with the one franchise forever. Very few people do. And my initial trade idea here is maybe Oklahoma City can trade the Rockets all their draft picks back and get James Harden.
Oh, God, that's hilarious. Sure, why not? I mean, the team should be lining up at the door. I know a lot of people, lot of fans don't like Harden because of the style and all that stuff, but he's obviously amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, every team that can get Harden should try.
Yes, absolutely. Like, Ricky, what if, for the Bulls, what was a good trade package for the Bulls to throw it for James Harden?
The entire roster? Like, I don't care about
it. Literally everything.
Like, obviously, like, Zach... At least Zach, the number four pick, probably a future pick, at least one of the big men, and then Like, do you need still, like, Otto Porter to, like, make salaries work, and then maybe even more than that? Like, I don't know. Like, obviously it's going to need a lot.
Yeah, and then the Rockets could get really comfortable finishing 13th in the conference, which is where the Bulls have been the last few years, and
absolutely,
they can just, you know, make themselves at home there. So, my immediate thought, though, is that I think that this is sort of going to be a quiet offseason because it's so truncated and because, like, you know, we're going to get into the regular season so quickly here. I think that,
it seems like we're going to have a few big deals here.
CP3 will move, Holiday will move. And then I really think it's setting up for just, like, a totally, like, mind-melting offseason at the end of this upcoming season. Giannis probably moves. Harden moves. Who knows what happens with the Sixers. I think the whole league just blows up and rearranges. And
love to see it.
That'll be fun.
Yep, absolutely. So before we talk about the Bulls and their draft, the number 4 pick, let's take a quick word from our sponsors, Indeed and Bet Online. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world, because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. So right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. So try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. So go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. The offer is valid through December 31st. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. So head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use that promo code BlueWire at BetOnline.ag. That's BlueWire, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. We are back. Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. Ricky, let me throw it over to you to ask Ben what your first question about the Bulls and the number 4 pick.
You say it like I have one prepared, but no, let's just talk about the number 4 pick because, Ben, I feel like I tweeted my mock draft where I had the Bulls taking Killian Hayes and you were agreeing with that selection. Let's just run down a few of their options they could take at number 4, though, before we get into, like, exactly what you would do. So I feel like the name that's being buzzed about right now is Deni Avdija, the Israeli power forward. I feel like people are saying that he's going to go to the Bulls because the Bulls' new front office of Arturas Karnišovas and Mark Eversley is not giving the media shit. I think everyone's totally in the blind on this right now, and we're going to know what the Bulls are going to do about 15 seconds before they do it when Woj tweets it, and not a second earlier than that. So I think that people are guessing Deni because there's this sense around the league that his value is top five worthy, and there's a sense around the league that, well, Karnišovas has an international background. Denny's an international player, so I'm not totally sure how much faith to put into the projection that the Bulls are going to take Deni. I don't expect you to have any insight on this, but I'm curious what you would think of Deni going forth to the Bulls and sort of what your analysis of that pick would be if it did happen.
Yeah, it wouldn't be my favorite pick, mostly because of value. I just don't think Deni is top five good. I have him as like a mid-lottery type, more than a top five real value, just because I don't think he brings any of the creation and he's not good enough of like a defender or you know, a playmaker or does any of the things. Like, he's not like Jaren Jackson when it comes to superstar role players as prospects. So I just think he leaves a lot of that to be desired. Just don't think he generates the impact of a top five pick. So, like even if it is a decent fit, which we'll get into, I just think there's going to be better options. I don't hate the fit. I think you want guys who can make good decisions and kind of take the ball and take decision-making responsibility away from Zach LaVine and, like, to a lesser extent, Coby White, even though it's not really as big of a problem at this point to me. I don't hate it. I mean, assuming they keep both of their bigs, I think he provides some lineup versatility. Probably don't want him playing anything really with the four, but regarding the other two, I mean, he's a really, really impactful defender, really smart team defender, making rotations to protect the rim on the backside. He's not, you know, the toolsiest or the strongest or the most explosive, but he's really smart and disciplined, and he plays really, really hard. So I think he's going to be a good four defender. And then offensively, obviously, you know, the shot has been belabored to death by everybody. I'm more concerned about his ability to, you know, create his own offense with the ball in his hands. I just don't think he can really dribble or you know, finish or create space at the level he needs to be. But I think he's going to be a really, really good off-ball player. He's maybe the best cutter in the draft, just an awesome sense of space and getting into spots. Obviously a very good passer. And, you know, like I talked about with Culver earlier, I think his lack of, you know, his lack of self-creation and ability to, you know, dribble and get to spots limits the passing in the half court. But he's a really, really great passer who I think can run a secondary pick and roll from time to time and definitely attack a closeout if anyone's ever closing out to him or off of a cut. So I think there's a lot of useful skills that he brings. So he to me is like more of a ceiling raiser than someone who can drive your offense or raise your floor. I just don't really think he's what the Bulls need. I think the Bulls need to shoot for someone who can really drive up that ceiling by himself and drive up the floor, excuse me, and be more of like an offensive driver, which is why, you know, I like someone like Killian Hayes a lot more. That's the example that I'm sure we're going to talk about later that I would love. I think If this is like the final Bulls team, he adds a lot of things they don't have as like a useful role player, and he'd probably be a pretty solid NBA player. But with the number four pick, especially with the position that the Bulls are in, I would personally look elsewhere and look for someone with more of a ceiling, really.
Yeah. So, like, where do you think this like top possible like five hype? Because I feel like I've seen some other hype from. I know, like, I think it was Ethan Strauss wrote something about how the Warriors really liked him and how just a lot of teams really liked him. Do you think it's just because of in this draft with so many like question marks about how good some of these guys can be just because he does so many things well? I know something we've talked about is like the Luka factor, and obviously I've tried to shut that down. Like, obviously he's no Luka Doncic, but do you think teams are like seeing, since because Luka, they underestimated Luka, that like, well, maybe we don't want to underestimate this guy? Do you think that's some of that is playing into why he's kind of getting some like possible top five hype and possibly number four to the Bulls?
Maybe. I mean, I don't really think so. Or at least I like to think NBA,
yeah, I would hope not,
better than that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is just he kind of has like the pedigree, as he's been in like top prospect conversations for a long time since he was, you know, like 17 or 16 playing up in FIBA and playing really well at those lower international levels. And then just someone who, again, I think he's like a 6'8" gets the versatility label, even though I think the versatility is kind of oversold. That's just kind of a blanket statement people use about Denny when they don't really know about his game or haven't thought about his role to me. But I mean, I don't think Denny in the top five is like crazy, because he is like probably going to be a really useful role player. I've said this before the season when I was higher on Denny than I was now. I always thought he was like a star role player at his ceiling. And I've talked about this before. I think two teams that Denny fits incredibly well and that really could use a player exactly like Denny are the Wolves and the Warriors. Obviously, I would scoff a little bit at Denny top two just because of how I think of his general impact and value. But if the Warriors or the Wolves were at four or five and they took Denny, I would totally understand that pick and get it. I think there's like legitimate arguments for Denny pretty high. I mean, I would definitely understand why somebody would have him in the top five range, even if it's not something I personally have.
All right, let's move on to another guy. We're going to push off Killian for a little bit later.
I was going to say, should we use this as a segue to a possible, like he talked about Denny to the Wolves, like or the Warriors, if they traded back, if the Bulls were to trade up to one or two, because that's been kind of out there as well with LaMelo Ball, and like if the Bulls, as I think it was Gavoni, like said something about how The Bulls are one of the popular, quote unquote, popular picks to possibly move up for LaMelo Ball. I know Casey Johnson said that he talked about how he thinks if Ball dropped to four, the Bulls would take him, but obviously it would probably take a trade up. So I guess just in this case, like, if they were going to trade up for a LaMelo Ball, or I guess this, Ben, just you could talk about what you think LaMelo Ball's fit with the Bulls would be. Do you think they should maybe target him for a possible trade up? And if they, and if you think so, what would you be comfortable moving up in this draft, whatever, two or three spots to go get him?
Yeah. I don't think I would trade up for LaMelo just because I'd be almost certain that the Bulls could stay put and draft Killian Hayes at four, and that would be just as good, if not better. I have Killian and LaMelo as like my clear one and two, with LaMelo at one and Killian at two in their own tier. I'm not really sure which one I like better for Chicago, actually. I think probably LaMelo, just because I think his ceiling is kind of an offensive engine is higher, and long-term, I think that's what they really need. Yeah, I mean, I would like LaMelo's fit in the long-term. I think, you know, he doesn't really fit spectacularly with Kobe White or Zach LaVine, but I think if you're taking someone like LaMelo, it's with the understanding that he is your future, and those two are less of that. I think, yeah, well, I mean, Zach LaVine, I don't know what their future with him is, but I don't really want him playing on the ball, like, for a team that's trying to, like, win in the playoffs. Kobe White, I kind of feel similarly about, though obviously he's young and he has potential. I wasn't a huge Kobe White guy, and I'm still not really super optimistic about him as anything more than, like, a microwave scorer, which definitely has his uses. But LaMelo is someone who could legitimately run, I think, a good offense if he hits his ceiling. Is something that is kind of too hard, too much to pass up. Just a special passer at his height and his age, a special ball handler, somebody who whose shot is somewhat problematic, but not as problematic as a lot of people seem to think to me. And then while his frame is really problematic, because of that, he really struggles as a driver at the moment, just always getting bumped off his spot. And when he has contact at the rim, he struggles to finish. But the touch is ridiculous. He's going to be like an incredible floater guy, which is something he specifically really, really needs. That's someone who's going to be operating in pick and rolls all the time and getting to that intermediate area of the floor, and someone who probably isn't going to be explosive enough to get all the way and finish at a high clip, maybe ever, but at least not for a couple years, at the very shortest. So I think he makes sense. I also think he'd be like a really awesome complement with both Wendell Carter and more Wendell than Lowry. Cause I mean, Melo just like having like a pick, you know, having pick and pop bigs who are also like smart passers, I think amplifies what he does. I would most want him to have like a real lob threat, which I don't think either of those definitely are not.
Daniel Gafford,
bro.
Yeah, I mean, if Gafford is that, then I think he really needs like a real lob threat to mostly be maximized, because he is just kind of, you know, an incredible lob passer. Yeah, that's the thing I would do. Deep, I think the Bulls can afford to like bleed the value they lose from him initially on defense, because again, not a team that's really looking to or hoping to compete right now, I think. I like LaMelo's long-term defensive upside. I've talked about this. I think he's pretty wildly underrated as a defensive prospect because, yes, he's objectively pretty bad right now, but he just turned 19. He's 6'7", and he is a basketball genius who genuinely played basketball defense for the first time this past season in the NBL and had some really impressive moments, especially as the season went on. So I like him as a long-term defender. Obviously, like, not as much as Killian, and not nearly as much right now as Killian Hayes, who would, I think, help the Bulls from day one on defense. But LaMelo is the pick I would have made. I don't think it's worth trading up for him, though, especially not if you have to give up a lot.
Yeah, LaMelo's number one on my board. I feel like LaMelo to the Bulls is the best fit for both the player and the team. Like, if you look at these other teams, I don't really think LaMelo wants to go to Minnesota. I don't really think he wants to be overshadowed by, you know, Steph, Draymond, and Klay in Golden State. And if you're choosing between the Hornets and the Bulls and the Cavs, like, obviously the Bulls are the most appealing situation out of all those. So for LaMelo, yeah, I think he should be rooting to go to the Bulls. And for the Bulls, I think he is both the best overall player in the draft and the best fit. So I would love to take him. I'm right there with Ben, where I think, you know, 2-3, I got Killian and Anthony Edwards, and it's more dependent on team fit. Like, I would think the Warriors would be better for Anthony Edwards, and I would think that Killian would be better for the Bulls, just in terms of a vacuum. So, you know, those two guys are close enough where it's more about how they fit into team context. But if the Bulls could only give up just, like, not one of their core pieces to move up a couple spots, I would love that. You know, obviously the Warriors trying to win next year. I've said this a bunch of times, but like maybe there's a way you could work out a deal where you're either sending them Otto Porter, who would be really good on Golden State, or you're just giving them some bench help with Thad Young, Sadaransky, who would also probably be pretty good there.
Yeah, I mean, if you could move up to 2 without giving up any of the young guys or like Otto or any valuable future first, I think that would be certainly something I'd be into. Whether you can actually do that is like a question, but like if you can, I think it's probably worth it.
Yeah. Well, let's say the Bulls stay at 4, and, you know, I've been saying on this podcast since the lottery ended that Killian Hayes is the guy the Bulls should take. We had our mutual friend P.D. Webb on to tell us all about Killian, but I'll just give you the floor here, Ben, because it sure seems like there's a better chance that Killian Hayes falls outside of the top 10 than he goes at number 4. That's just the current speculation, as we're 1 week away from the draft. Like I said, I think that whoever thinks they know shit about what the Bulls are going to do, they really don't know anything because Karnišovas has been very tight-lipped, which personally I think is cool. But, you know, the general idea, though, is definitely that Killian is likely to, like, or possibly slip outside the top 10. So I'll just give you the floor. Why do you think he's the right pick for the Bulls at 4?
Yeah, I mean, like I'm sure PD has talked about, I mean, on your podcast and my own, I think he's absolutely the pick for the Bulls. I think he's the very easy pick for the Bulls at 4 if he's there. Just a fantastic basketball player and a really good prospect. I mean, he's, like you said, probably going to go outside of the top 10 or like later in the top 10, which is pretty absurd to me. Is Killian like so obviously good? I think there's like a lot of old narratives that Killian kind of falls into where if you know, we're just looking at Killian before this last season at Ulm, where if you just watched him at Cholet and in FIBA, you could say all of the things like, oh, like how is he going to score at all? Or is he going to be able to survive defensively on an NBA floor? And you can make those concerns and be like legitimately concerned, well, I guess concerned about those. And those were concerns that I had coming into the season, but he improved so dramatically this year at Ulm on both sides of the ball. The playmaking has always been there and is still there. Despite the lack of a right hand, he's brilliant as a playmaker, manipulative with timing and anticipation, a high, high level passer, would instantly become, you know, the guy running off the pick and roll for the Bulls. Like they're only like real plus passer, and plus playmaker on the roster, something they desperately need, I think. And then, like, offense, as a scorer, he's made crazy strides. As athletically, he's improved quite a bit. His change of direction most significantly has gotten a lot better to where he's legitimately able to beat guys with, you know, quick crossovers and just changing his angle, the angle of his drive and getting into the lane. I think he's a little bit burstier as well, though. That is definitely, like you'll hear a blanket, like, oh, he's not quick enough to survive in the NBA. Yes, like, his burst is not elite, and he's not an advanced ball handler. But, like, you see, like, the D'Angelo Russell comparison thrown out because of that and because like of like the light skin lefty thing, which is totally reductive and not good. But I mean, you'll see like the lack of burst, which yes, they share, but Killian is much bigger. I mean, he's like legit 6'5", strong, knows how to use that strength to carve out space and use his footwork and body to decelerate and create tiny little angles and windows to get shots off. And he has elite touch as well. So I think, I mean, I'm not really worried about the finishing or the slashing. I mean, not like an elite high level finisher or slasher, but for his role, which is like not like a primary driver of offense, it'll be good enough. And then like the jumper has improved like a ton. So Killian's always been kind of a mid-range pull-up artist. And because of that, you always kind of expected him to eventually stretch it out as, you know, that's a really strong indicator of pull-up three development in prospects. Those prospects in college or wherever they are before the NBA who are really good at long twos but don't have the three often develop those pull-up threes and become really good at them. I mean, you see it in, like, Kawhi and Jason Tatum and Chris Middleton and Siakam, and there's plenty of examples. But Killian did that as a prospect. Like, he became an accomplished off-dribble shooter this year at Ulm as an 18-year-old. Everyone has seen, you know, the double step backs and the side steps. That's all pretty legit, I think. He's like a legit space creator for his jumpers, which is hugely impressive. Off the ball on offense, he struggles just because he's never really done it, and he doesn't have the skill to play on the ball at this point. But that's a thing that can be taught, as I think getting him to be better on spot up threes, which is what drags his 3-point percentage down to like 29-ish%, which you'll see cited as a concern, which I totally disagree with. You have to take into account, you know, like the difficulty of shots he's taking and the volume and his shot profile. That's also much more important than the raw percentage. And the fact that he's been an elite free throw shooter over his entire youth career. And then defensively, like one of the best guard defenders in the whole draft on the ball, again, has improved drastically to the point where he always had like pretty good lateral mobility and, you know, hip movement. I think that's improved a little bit this year, but his technique is just wildly better, staying in front of guys, having good footwork and getting around screens. But then like the real thing with him is he's a brilliant team defender, stunting and defending at the nail, making backside rotations, blowing up handoffs and weak side actions, and not being super mistake prone for his age is really, really impressive. He's just an all around excellent guard, potentially someone who could defend up because of his genuine size and length. He's like easily the best player on the board at 4 for the Bulls, assuming LaMelo is gone, I think. And just makes so much sense as a playmaker to, you know, make good decisions and be able to actually facilitate offense from the perimeter for his teammates. And then long term, you know, he's a player that doesn't hinder your team building because he is such an incredible defender. And I think he can learn to play off of the ball as well. So Killian, yeah, like you said, the easy pick for me at 4 for the Bulls if he's there. I think it's like an outside shot possible. That's probably the highest. Like, I could see Killian realistically go, but still, I mean, I think it's unlikely, which is unfortunate. But
yeah, I was really interested to see just, like, this kind of disconnect between, like, you two guys love him, PD Webb loves him, and now I think Kevin O'Connor has him number one on his board. But then when I saw, like, that ESPN article from Jonathan Givony, that in the, like, that 10 to 20 range, like, so, like, the second or third tier of guys, like, I'm very curious about that disconnect. You seems like you kind of addressed that. It just seems like there's, like, old narratives playing against him. So that's kind of crazy. It's just, like, a huge range for him, it seems like.
Yeah, do you think there's all these dudes in NBA front offices who are like, look at these nerds on Twitter who thought Jared Culver was the second best player in the draft other than John Morant, and they're, like, talking about me and maybe Ben and other people?
Probably. I mean, you'd hope. I mean, again, but this is obviously a very different situation. And Killian is an incredibly different player than Jarrett Culver in like a lot of ways, but I mean, yeah, like I hope like he's. I think it would actually be pretty cool if he landed. Like there's a lot of prospects to me that are like top level good in this draft, but they're just falling. The other big one for me is Tyrese Maxey, who I think like because like they could land in situations that have good teams and teams with big creators and players who can amplify their skills, it's even more likely that they're going to end up turning out really good in front offices are going to say, well, we could have had him at 4 or 3 instead of whoever we took and probably would have liked him better. So,
I guess one other name we'll ask you about before we I want to ask you about second round guys too for the Bulls at I think it's 44 they have. But first I want to ask you about Tyrese Halliburton. There's been a little bit of buzz with the Bulls and Tyrese Halliburton. I've, you know, given my spiel on him throughout the episodes of this podcast. So, you know, let's say the Bulls come out of this draft with Tyrese Halliburton. Maybe it's a trade down. Maybe they take him at 4.
Hollinger has him mocked at 4, even though he's like, he wasn't that sure about it, but he says a lot of people love him, and he has him going at 4.
So what would you think about that, Ben?
Yeah, I would really not like it. Like, I'm at the point, like, with Denny where it's like, yeah, I wouldn't do it, but I kind of get it. Like, I understand why the Bulls would be into Denny. Halliburton, it just really would be a pick that I guess, again, like, can understand based on things about Halliburton that people say that I don't think are true, but I just don't like Halliburton really as a top prospect. And I think he kind of needs to go to a good team that has pieces in place to have the most success, and the Bulls just aren't an environment for him to succeed to me. I think that's actually partially not true, because he cannot play on the ball, and the Bulls probably wouldn't put him much on ball. Though you never know when you're drafting him in the top four, that they might want him to run more on ball than he's comfortable with and capable of. I think where he's really strong is, like, everyone has called him this linking piece, where the passing obviously is elite, where he has the problem where, because he can't create at all for himself. As an on-ball passer, I'm pretty low on him, just because he can't dribble or shoot pull-ups or has the strength or the burst to get to the rim and finish or create separation. But attacking closeouts and in transition and running secondary pick and rolls and off of motion, the passing can be really, really effective, I think. And coupling that with the fact that I think he's going to be a very good spot-up shooter means that he's a really good, like, off-ball guard type. I'm just questioning how valuable that really is, especially for a team like the Bulls, who kind of has someone like have linking role players. Like, I think that's kind of Wendell Carter embodied, like, fully realized as kind of functionally a linking big, though I think he'd be a very, very good one. So I just don't think he really is something, like, the Bulls need to shoot for upside. And I don't think Halliburton really gives you any. And then defensively, like, I have a lot of concerns, despite, like, some of the ridiculous playmaking and team defense and out-of-nowhere rotations and spontaneous blocks. That's all really, really great. But all of the other stuff, not just the on-ball defense, which is really problematic because of the lack of strength and his high hips and narrow shoulders and his bad footwork. I'm definitely on the record of being a proponent of team defense being more important than on-ball defense. But even then, outside of the big plays, just the play-to-play consistency to me is worrisome, as he's not good closing out, chasing around screens, or, like, consistent enough making little perimeter rotations. There's just, like, a lot of room to grow for him. I just don't think the Bulls are the best environment for him to grow, because it seems like any team in the top four, bar maybe, like, the Warriors, because they're in just such a unique situation for a team picking at the top, is really, really not a spot for Halliburton to succeed, because they're going to overextend him and ask him to take on a role that I don't think he's comfortable taking on. That certainly worries me for his development. So that's kind of why I'd be pretty out on Halliburton at four to the Bulls. I really need, like, top seven-ish pick for him.
All right. I was gonna say before we wrap up with that, the second round picks, is there anybody else here in this lottery era who you think would make sense with the Bulls? Obviously, you're high on Killian. We talked about LaMelo. Because I saw a few rumblings about, like, Patrick Williams. I know Casey Johnson wrote about Onyeka Okongwu recently, about how there might be some interest there. And there was, like, the Bam Adebayo comparison there. Any other names there you think could make some sense for the Bulls, whether it's at four or maybe if there's a slight trade back?
Yeah. I like Poku at four. I know you've got him at 10. Again, I think the Bulls just kind of want ceiling, and he, to me, has, like, the second or third highest ceiling in this class. I think with Poku, you don't really worry about the fit, because he's not going to be an NBA contributor to me for quite a while. But I think the potential reward is significant there. There just aren't 7-foot 18-year-olds. Like, he's still 18. There aren't 7-foot 18-year-olds with the type of special skill and intelligence he shows off, despite the very real role and skill and frame concerns. I think he could be an intriguing option. And then the other two are Vassell and Okoro. Just teams, you can never really have too many defensive-oriented wings. Both of them, to me, special defensive upside. Vassell more on the team side, or Okoro more on the ball, though Okoro, I think, is no slouch as a team defender. And then both bring, you know, significant offensive upside in their own ways. Vassell as a shooter and difficult shot maker, Okoro as a slasher and a wing playmaker. So, I mean, I think those are the three other options that I would really, really like for the Bulls. I mean, Patrick Williams would be solid as well. But I think similar concerns to Denny there. I think they're pretty similar prospects, though I like Pat Will better. Onyeka, I'd say only if they're really done with Wendell Carter, because I don't want Onyeka playing the four. I just don't think that's a maximization of his skill set.
That sounds right.
Yeah. So those, I guess, outside of Killian, who's, like, the very obvious home run pick, I'd say Vassell, Okoro, and Poku would be my top three wants for the Bulls at four if they stuck or traded down a couple spots or whatever they ended up doing.
All right, so to wrap this up, 44, that's the Bulls pick in the second round. Give me three names who you think would be good picks at, you know, mid-second round pick number 44 if they're still on the board.
First one is Killian Tilly, who I say on, like, every single second round thing ever. Just a perfect modern NBA big man at 6'10" with elite big man shooting and decision-making with his passing and plus handling. Obviously, the big caveat is, and the reason he's falling this far is the injuries that he even before his Gonzaga career, could never stay healthy. And I think there's a good chance he just never is able to stay healthy. But if he is healthy, like even for like a little bit, I think that's worth second round pick because that's, you know, whatever you're getting out of him is, I think, a playoff worthy role player as a big man.
The double Killian too. What if they did that? That'd be fun.
That would like be like the perfect draft. I mean, I think defensively, though his mobility is not as great as it once was, you know, I think the injuries had some contribution to that. He's still plus and mobile for his size, and he's brilliant as a team defender as well, despite lacking, you know, the plus size and athleticism that gives him like a real defensive ceiling. But like that would be just, he's such a good basketball player, and I think would be a fantastic pick for them at 40. At, you know, 44, wherever they pick. Another one is Isaiah Joe, who I think he might actually probably wind up going higher than this, but ESPN on their best available has him 48, and that's kind of like my main intel source that I trust in terms of ranking and valuation. Just like a really nuclear shooter and potentially offensive player. I have Isaiah Joe in my top 20. I view him as like much more of an upside swing with real downside than like a safe 3-and-D plug and play type, which I think he has gotten a little bit of a rep as, just because the downside being he might just never have the frame to really hold up in the NBA. Like he might be too weak to ever drive, too weak to hold up on defense, too weak to even extend his range out to like 30 feet, which he certainly could if he improves his core strength. But I think special shooting potential with his range and versatility and just the volume of threes he takes. And then like with some legit offensive skills, like he's a good handler, creates space with step backs, a really smart passer, like has that pocket pass down. Then defensively, like a really sometimes overly aggressive, but aggressive and anticipatory team defender who covers a ton of ground and has nice technique on the ball, despite, you know, his very much lack of strength, just a dire need to improve his frame to survive in the NBA. So those are the two obvious ones that come to my head. There aren't really like a lot of great second rounders to me in this draft. Like I think like Desmond Bane, Xavier Tillman, even like Grant Riller are all probably going to be out of the range at 44. So I guess the last guy I'll go with who I really like is Nate Hinson out of Houston. Just like a defense first wing forward prospect who really is an impressive team defender, covers a ton of ground, lots of range rotating to make plays at the rim and get steals. And obviously, you know, what you hear about him is just the uniquely incredible rebounding where like his ability to track the ball off the rim is kind of one of a kind. It's really, really special. I mean, that the defense is spectacular. The issue with him is, you know, being a 6'5 wing/forward who really struggles offensively. His spot-up shooting was good in college, and I think if it can be good, he can find a role. Just, you know, not a plus passer, handler, has a little, like, one dribble pull-up game and some secondary passing, but none of that to me is really functional in terms of, you know, for the NBA. But if he's a guy who you can get to shoot, he can find his way onto an NBA floor because of, like, wing defense and that rebounding is always valuable. So those are my three, you know, kind of second-round names that I tend to default to for every team, because I think in the second round you're generally not really you're not really picky about fit, at least as you go down in the second round. So those are the three prospects that I would be really heavily looking at.
All right, man. Well, thank you for joining us. Where can people hear your analysis on the draft in podcast form and articles? Let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, my main thing is, as Ricky and Jason graciously plugged at the top, Prep to Pro Pod with Max Carlin. We do weekly, bi-weekly, right now like three or four shows a week ramping up to the draft. And then, you know, our work doesn't stop because a week after the draft is college basketball, and we are going to be talking college basketball games and 2021 draft right after the 2020 draft ends. So constant contact must, you know, you can find us on Twitter at @prep2propod. Get us everywhere you listen to your podcasts. And I will plug one more thing. We are doing a live draft broadcast / episode on Twitch during the draft. So if you want, you know, a different, you know, more interactive draft broadcast to listen to than, you know, just the one on your TV or alongside the one on your TV, come hop in where Max and I will answer your questions and we're going to have guests on and try to make it look as, you know, cool and professional as two college kids can. But so yeah, that's going to be a really fun time. And that's going to be released as a podcast episode as well after, you know, we finish up the draft, we're going to release that. So if you can't make it, yeah, that'll be a pod, but that's going to be super fun. But that's the big Prep the Pro thing. I'm probably going to have like a final board released in some capacity. I'm not really sure what that's going to look like just because of time constraints. Also just like for 2021, but just follow me on Twitter at @Ben_Pfeiffer_ for like all of my work. But yeah, I mean, just the main thing is if you enjoyed what I had to say on this podcast, go check out Prep the Pro.
I'm going to be on the Zoomer Draft show that is Prep to Pro podcast. So that's
excellent. We are the Zoomer Draft show.
Check out that. I'll be there around the time of the fourth pick, I think. So Prep to Pro Pod, super good, really good. No one analyzes the draft better in the public sphere, but in these guys, you know, outside of like ESPN and the real information merchants in terms of the analysis. I think that Max and Ben do a wonderful job. So everyone make sure you're following that podcast. And yeah, thanks for listening, guys.
And thank you so much for joining us, Ben. Here at Cash Considerations, it's Chicago Bulls Pod. Thanks, as always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. Shout out to our sponsors, Indeed and Bet Online. And with the draft coming up, with free agency, with all this stuff happening, go check out all those other great pods across the Blue Wire Network. We've got a bunch of great NBA pods. And, of course, we have a bunch of other pods as well. Please go check all of those out. So for Jason and Ricky, and thanks again to Ben for joining us. This has been Cash Considerations, Chicago Bulls Podcast. We got the draft in a week. We will, unless something big happens with the Bulls, the next time we'll talk to you guys is probably going to be right after the draft. So we'll talk to you guys next time.